I'm Anne Marie Green, a CBS Morning News and CBSN anchor. In September's issue of Popular Mechanics, Associate Editor Lara Sona Connage took an intensive look at how to make schools safer at a time when school shootings have become all too familiar. Lara's reporting took her across the country, from Newtown, Connecticut to Littleton, Colorado, where two deadly school shootings occurred 14 years apart. Here is our conversation. All right, Lara, thank you so much for joining us. So the issue of school security, it's a hot topic. It's a topic that people are very passionate about. And, you know, everyone wants the same thing. They want kids to be able to feel secure in their school, so they're in a safe learning environment. But whether that means a school that looks like, a prison, or whether that means something completely different on the sort of other end of the spectrum is part of the debate.
Right.
You guys did a great sort of broke this issue down in a very interesting way. And you go back a little bit and look at, Colorado and look at Newtown. And these are two areas. When you think of Newtown, when you say the name of that town, you think of the massacre if you're not from there.
Yes.
So let's talk about Colorado. They had two school shootings 14 years apart. What are some of the lessons they learned? I think maybe, they've had the longest time to really consider the best practices.
Right. Colorado is a really interesting situation because so they had the Columbine shooting back in the 90s. And then in 2013, Arapahoe High School experienced a shooting. One student died and the shooter himself also died. And it's interesting because Littleton was thinking about school security much more than your average school was at the time of the Arapahoe shooting. The man that I spoke to the most out in Littleton was Guy Grace. He was their director of security. And to even have a director of security at a school district was sort of a revolutionary idea. And he had been there for, I think, 25 years when their shooting happened. So they had been doing drills. They had a radio system to communicate with each other. But they still had a shooting happen at their school district. And it goes to show that unfortunately you can be really up on your security and really thinking about this, but there are no guarantees. Now, that said, the shooter that went into Littleton intended to kill many, many, many people. He had a lot of ammo on him. He had written manifestos that said that, he intended to kill lots of kids. And I think a lot of credit is owed to their security for the fact that many students didn't die. Of course, you never want any student to die, but most kids in that area had the presence of mind to get up and run out of the building, whereas, untrained students may have just frozen in fear. They may not have known what to do. So that was very fortunate for them. But in the time since then, what Littleton has actually done is they've improved their security, their ability to communicate with each other. Something that happened at their shooting at Arapahoe was the whole one wing of the school had no idea what was going on. They never heard the shots. They never, and fortunately they were far enough away that they weren't in immediate danger. But ideally, you want kids to know in that wing of the school to get out and run or to hide. So now they have a lot of ways to talk to each other. They have a central security team that can speak to any classroom in any building in the school district. They have lots of ways to communicate. And they also have invested a lot in personal relationships with their students, that sort of softer aspect to quote-unquote hardening schools. It's making sure that kids get the help they need. It's making sure that kids can tell teachers and parents comfortably if they're worried about someone else. So really interesting story out there in Littleton and just how security, but also having a good relationship with students has helped them to heal and hopefully prevent something like this from ever happening again.
The sort of lasting image that I got from that article, though, was the wall of screens.
Yes.
With cameras everywhere.
Yes.
And I wondered if that made people feel uncomfortable to know that someone's watching you all the time.
Right. So the first thing I'll say is, a school that has experienced a shooting is going to have a very different point of view from a school that's never had one. So out in Littleton, it's a bit of a traumatized community still, even 5-6 years later. So for them, that was the right solution, because for them to know that somebody was watching over them at all times, that helped that community go back to school and feel good about it.
Right.
Now, the vast majority of schools in this country will never, ever have a shooting, and they probably don't need quite the same thing as Littleton has. And something that we tried to emphasize in our story is it's unique solutions for unique schools. If your school is in a city, or if it's rural, or if it's tons of schools, or if it's just two schools in a district, you're going to have different solutions. So the other thing about Littleton is it's huge. They have, I believe, 27 buildings and 22 schools. So having cameras around allows someone to see what's going on in a school that's several miles away. If you don't have that situation, it's not really as necessary. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a unique solution for that school district, which has had a traumatizing experience. People in the area, even being near Columbine, have had sort of a bad experience with that kind of thing. So for them, their parents, students, teachers felt comfortable with that kind of video surveillance. It doesn't necessarily mean that every school in the country needs a giant wall full of monitoring and cameras.
Mm-hmm. The other school that you visited was Newtown, which the building doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
But a new building is on that property.
Yes.
A different situation there.
Yes.
What can we take away from how they've recovered and moved forward?
Yeah. So the most striking thing about Sandy Hook Elementary when I went there was just how normal it felt. It didn't feel sad. It didn't feel scary. It didn't feel like a police state. It was a very normal, happy elementary school. Mm-hmm. And the big takeaway I got from Newtown is if any school in the country is going to go overboard with their security and really make it like a high-tech spaceship kind of deal, you would think it would be Sandy Hook. I mean, that was a terrible experience, and you'd think that they might have that instinct to put in more cameras, more monitoring, more metal detectors, but they didn't. A lot of what Sandy Hook has done is making sure that the outside of the school is not able to be broken into. Actually, the Sandy Hook shooting, they had their doors locked during the day when the shooter came to the school, but he was able to break through the glass on the doors and walk right in. So something we learned out there was either investing in ballistics-grade glass, or there are much cheaper films that you can put on your glass to ensure that if somebody comes in and tries to break through that film, they won't be able to just waltz right into the school. And then other than that, again, the administrator of security there, Mark Pompano, said to me the first two things he tells any school that asks him about security is, do you have a see something, say something tip line? And are your doors locked during the day, your front doors? Again, these are very simple sort of things. They're not high-tech solutions. Tip lines, they have both in Colorado and Littleton, and they allow people to express concern about other students. And that also goes beyond an act of violence. Even when I was out in Littleton, Guy mentioned that in the past year, they had 6 attempted suicides that they were able to intervene in because students felt comfortable saying, my friend is posting things on social media or implying that they might hurt themselves. So those are two really good starting places for any school. And then you can talk about, you know, bigger, higher tech things beyond that.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that you point out in both of the articles is that, you know, we're talking about school safety in terms of school shootings, mm-hmm. but they're unlikely.
Right.
But there are a host of other things that happen on school grounds that are thwarted by this level of security.
Right, definitely. Out in Littleton, Guy Grace told me that their vandalism rate had gone down 98% over the past couple years since they installed cameras. So kids aren't going to draw on the walls or graffiti because they know that they're going to get caught. But beyond that, as I mentioned, the suicides was a huge impact. And, you know, it can be a really big problem with adolescents. So if you're able to intervene before a child hurts themselves, that's a huge benefit. And then, you know, some other things beyond that, there are sometimes parents who want to come get a child and they don't have custody over that child. So having doors locked during the day, making sure you're checking who's coming in and out of the school, that keeps someone from getting their child who shouldn't. So there's lots of things that these kinds of security measures help with. In fact, we definitely stress that you should never purchase any measure that is specifically for if a shooter comes into your school, because it's impractical, and you can spend your money on better things that will help in a number of ways and be multi-purpose.
You know, whenever there's a shooting, right, school districts across the country start to discuss what needs to be done. Politicians set aside money for high security. And I was in Florida, in Parkland, at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, speaking to the superintendent there, Broward County, and a lot of parents were really upset because he had not implemented a metal detector at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. That district had hired an outside firm to research the security options, and that outside firm came to the conclusion that a metal detector would not make a difference.
Right.
So instead they had people checking the kids' bags. But what the school superintendent said to me was, essentially, these weren't his exact words, but essentially, I'm not going to engage in security theater
right.
to make other people happy. I'm not going to do something that all the information that I've received indicates that it's not going to be safer. And in fact, it might be detrimental to safety. There's got to be a concern that when the purse strings open up and you can throw pretty much everything at security, that there will be a tremendous amount of money wasted.
Right. So there's two things to address here. The first is that in my research, I also found metal detectors are not recommended by most people in this field. And it's a pretty simple reason. Kids are sneaky. And, you know, you can have this obvious metal detector, but they're going to find ways to pass things through windows or get around them. So they're not really a practical solution. And they also make your environment feel a little bit like airport security, you mm-hmm. know, which is not good for a learning environment. Beyond that, yes, you really have to be careful about what you're spending your money on. A lot of administrators we spoke to throughout this process said, especially after a shooting like Parkland or Santa Fe, administrators get lots of phone calls from security companies, basically trying to sell them an expensive technology. And the knee-jerk reaction is to say, yes, take our money, make us safe. Nobody wants this to happen. Actually, there was a school out in Ohio that we heard about from a number of different people we spoke to for this story that had spent $30,000 on door barricades that were for the classroom to keep the doors closed in case of a shooter or someone trying to get in. And after they spent $30,000 on those barricades, they found out they violated local fire code, they violated building code, they violated American disability law. So they got into a pretty big mess out there because they were quick to raise the money and spend it and didn't really talk to all the interested parties about whether that technology was not only something that they wanted, but something that was practical and actually legal in their state. So basically, I would say the best place to start is to make sure you get your whole community together. That's parents, teachers, administrators, but also fire department, police officers, EMTs, and then also any coaches, any after-school theater programs, cafeteria workers, like really custodians especially, and get all these people together and start talking about what the biggest concerns are, talk about what the worst case scenarios are from their points of view, because, you know, for a coach, it might be someone getting struck by lightning, and for someone else, it might be something different. So talk to everybody about what their concerns are, and then really come to a solution together, and that will hopefully close the gap so that nobody's finding out about a technology after it's been bought. Everybody gets to voice their opinions, and you sort of don't have these situations where one group is mad at the other, or worst case scenario, one group is telling the other that something's illegal. Mm-hmm. So just make sure that you're sort of talking to everybody and you're really making these decisions slowly. Because while we all want our schools to be safer right now, you're better off taking the time to think about it and research it and figure out what the best solution is for you. And then in the meantime, you know, locking your doors, having a good environment where kids feel safe talking to their teachers, that's stuff you can do tomorrow. And that will help you feel good now. And those policies will take a little bit of time for everyone to get used to. And then buy those technologies later once you've researched.
Lara, locking your doors.
Yes.
Having a buzzer system.
Yes.
Making sure that visitors can only come in and out of one entrance.
Yes.
That's so basic.
It is basic.
Why isn't it happening everywhere?
You know, I think a lot of schools didn't want to ever have to think about this,
right,
as all of us do. You know, you don't want to think about the worst case scenario in a school. But I think especially this year following Parkland and Santa Fe, with those being such high casualty situations and happening so close together, now people are thinking about it. And is it inconvenient to have your back door locked during the day because kids want to go out on the playground, or you want to go out for gym class, or kids want to leave for lunch? Yes. Is it so inconvenient that you should circumvent that safety solution in order to do it? No. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just sort of, it's a combination of people not wanting to have to think about this problem. And it's also, logistically, it can be a little hard to change to something like that.
Right.
But, you know, it doesn't cost money. And if you can start talking about it at the beginning of this school year, then hopefully, you know, within a month or two, everybody knows. You don't prop the door open when you go out for science class, or you don't, you know, whatever, go out for a cigarette break and leave that back door open. It's just the reality of the time we live in.
I'm wondering if any of the people you spoke to commented on having armed guards at schools. After Parkland, the state lawmakers passed a law making it mandatory to have an armed guard or guardian. In Broward County, they tried to sort of start up a training program for guardians, ex-military people or ex-police officers who would then be trained to work in a school. They're having a heck of a time pulling it off. They're having a heck of a time finding people who can pass sort of the first layer of qualifications. And you know, a lot of the police departments in the area are looking for a few good men and women for themselves. They have a lot of vacancies, so it's difficult to find people to work in schools. I'm wondering if any of the people you spoke to thought that should be a priority, would have the impact that many people hope it would have to have an armed guard at a school.
So again, it depends on your school. You're going to have to come up with a solution for your specific school in your specific area. Now, of the schools that I spoke to, yes, some of them did have armed guards. They felt the need to have them in order to feel safer, whether that was their physical location within their community or, you know, personal reasons. I will say, if you have someone who's armed in your school, everybody emphasized to me, they must be so well trained, and they must also be the right temperament of person to be in a school. I spoke to the National Association of School Resource Officers, which is specifically for officers that are trained to go into schools and work with students. And their president emphasized to me, he's like, not many people can be a school resource officer. It is a very unique person who not only has a very technical background, but also has the right temperament and the right personality, and they want to work with kids. So the long story short is, if your district thinks that that's a solution that they want, it really needs to be a specific, well-trained person. That said, not every school district needs that solution. Not every school district wants that solution. Like everything we've spoken about in this, there is no one-size-fits-all answer. And you're going to have to, unfortunately, figure it out with your community. There's no answer I can give that sort of, you know, this is the answer for everybody.
Besides spending money that doesn't need to be spent, mm-hmm. What are some of the mistakes that are being made when it comes to school security?
So schools want to be careful about, again, copying what maybe the district next to them has or what a similar size district has, because, you know, the school next door may have a specific problem with non-custodial parents, but you may have a bigger problem with whatever, kids leaving the campus during the day. So you really want to talk about your specific needs, and you want to resist the urge to copy what someone else does. You know, it can feel easier to start off from a jumping point that someone else has done, but your school is unique. They're unique students and teachers. It's a unique environment. So you really want to make sure that you're keeping things hyper-specific. You always want to resist the urge to overdo anything. Again, at the end of the day, schools are schools. And at the end of the day, these aren't really big targets. It's very unlikely that you're going to experience a shooting. So resist the urge to panic and to overdo anything. And then other than that, it's just about taking your time and making sure that students and parents all feel comfortable. And as you're implementing technology as well, don't forget that that needs to be a slow process and a process where students feel comfortable with what's going on. Some of the schools we talked to recommended giving parents little cheat sheets so that when kids come home and they say, we're doing a shooter drill, parents know how to talk about it in a way that's age appropriate and not going to scare children. So there is no quick solution, and anything you do is going to be a slow rollout, and you just have to take the time and make the time for it.
Yeah, and one of the things that I got from your articles is that perhaps your best resources are the human beings that are part of the school family, but also outside, like parents, that drawing on those resources can be the cheapest and most effective way of securing your school.
Right, definitely. Best situation that you can have is that a student gets the help they need well before they ever buy a gun or a weapon or ever try to harm themselves or others. And that's a big part of this. When I was out in Littleton, Guy Grace told me about a child who was in elementary school or middle school who had brought a knife to school. And they took that child aside and they said, why did you do it? And he said, I was afraid. I'm getting bullied. And, you know, that child was taken to the school psychologist, but they also took him to an after-school self-defense program. And that helped that child not only to feel safer, like they could defend themselves, but it also got them involved with other kids who were interested in similar stuff so that hopefully he would make friends, the bullying would stop. It's sort of about these loving solutions that can hopefully happen years and years before anyone ever gets to the state of doing something outrageous and hurtful.
Yeah, all just great advice, great points, and a reminder there that, you know, the issue of school safety does not begin and end within the walls of the school.
Right.
It's far beyond that.
Yes.
Lara Sona-Cottage, thank you so much.
Thank you.